Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome all. We are going to be talking to a very, very special guest today. We've been trying for weeks to get her on with us. It's Bibi Farber. And for those of you who are with us on WebEx, you see her picture here in the snow in black. We haven't had hardly any snow here in February. Very unusual weather here. We are being sponsored by Sound Health, which is a research institute in Southern Ohio. We do research on sound, and I am having trouble being able to call Bibi, so give me 1 second here. You can hear me typing, and I apologize for that. No, you can't hear me talking. Dial. I don't know. We pay extra to get this phone and this dial-in, but they are just not cooperating here to get us to be able to do this. So I hope Bibi will call us shortly, and I'll be able to answer. Bibi. Are you
Hello?
Here with us? You're on. Oh, there you are. They still wouldn't let me dial out, so my apologies for this rough beginning here.
Oh, no problem. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine. Let me put this microphone over here where everyone can hear you, because we are simultaneously broadcasting on a WebEx, so people will be able to watch what is going on. For those of you who want to join us on WebEx and see the videos of all of this, go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com. There should be a link there on the front page. As I said, for those of you on WebEx, you're looking at Bibi Farber. This is a gorgeous picture of you in the snow.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. We've been trying to get Bibi on with us for about 3 weeks now, and we have succeeded, and I love it. I was first introduced to Bibi's work at Next World TV. I didn't know she was this famous musician at the same time. When somebody sent me a video that she had made of two women working in people's backyards creating gardens, and it was the same time that this lady, I can't remember where she was from, was sued and hauled off to jail for putting a garden of some really pretty vegetables in her front yard. And I guess that was against the ordinance that they couldn't have anything that was not pretty and decorative. Well, she had cabbages and other kind of things. I think those are really pretty. So I got in touch with Bibi, and she agreed to be on. We showed that film. People loved her. They loved that she would answer all the questions that they had, and she would give them information about what was going on. Bibi, do you guys ever get political?
I'm sorry, I'm having just a little trouble hearing you, but I almost heard you. Could you repeat that?
Anything political? Most of what I see from yours is about self-survival and how to clean up the planet, and how to love the planet, and how to love yourself.
Yes, yes. And I would say it's not political. I don't believe the solutions are political. That is my belief. I believe the more that we can address the issues at the local level and even at the community level, I believe that's where the healing can begin and have most power. So I don't believe, you know, that we'll be saved by the economy coming back, whether that's according to capitalist parameters, or I also don't believe that the government will save us or put in place restrictions that will address the issues of harming the planet or really any other issues. I believe the solutions are in our hands and not politicians, certainly not Wall Street and not Washington.
Okay, you heard it right from Levy. No political agendas on the show today. We're going to be talking about self-satisfaction, really, from growing our own food, from natural solutions to very complex problems, being self-sufficient and living a very self-sustaining and nature-supporting lifestyle. For those of you who are with us on WebEx, we are going to be playing some of Vivi's favorite videos. And a lot of them are about local food and permaculture, economy, reducing waste, homesteading, transitions. But this one is about the plastic in our oceans. Bibi, do you want to give an introduction to this one as we play it for people?
Yes, Sherry. Well, I just want to say, working with Next World TV and the videos, and just to clarify for your viewers, I find videos online that are produced, so I function like a digest, or I think maybe I'm a sustainability video DJ or a VJ. I'm not producing them from scratch. I just search the internet every day for the best videos on these subjects. So you're getting like a digest. And so I haven't produced any of these, but I select them from hundreds of other videos, sometimes on the same subject. And the plastic. So I've been doing Next World TV for over a year, and in that time, my personal use of plastic, or how I think about using plastic, has changed. I think of it now as practically criminal to incur more plastic. It is so bad for the planet. It does not biodegrade. And we use it every day. I don't know how to best educate people about this, but this one video really turned my mind around. It's about the fact that the plastic ends up in the oceans. But you know what, Sherry? No matter where it ends up, it's a problem. This is just about the oceans, and it's particularly heartbreaking because the fish think that this, you know, the plastic, it does sort of fall apart. And they think it's food. But I mean, to the ratio of, we'll let them hear the video, and it's a frightening ratio. You would not believe how much plastic there is compared to plankton for the fish to eat now. It's a sea of plastic, and yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
This video that you have chosen says it so well. And for those of you who are not with us on WebEx, would somebody from our chat please put the link in the Blog Talk Radio chat so people can go look, or people can go to nextworldtv.com. And this particular one is called Oceans of Plastic. And for those of you who are complaining about the sound on WebEx, I'm trying to take care of that, but you might get better sound at Blog Talk. So we're going to play this video, and then we'll open the channels to questions. And also, I want to ask Bibi a lot more questions myself. So if you're having trouble with the sound, chat me, and I'll see what we can do to move things around.
Oceans have been used as a dumping ground for waste. Since the 1960s, post-consumer plastic products have become the most common and persistent pollutants in the world's oceans. Plastics are lightweight, durable, and cost-effective. Plastics can be fabricated into most anything. Lamentably, these same properties pose a serious long-term hazard to ecosystems. It has been said that plastics, like diamonds, are forever. Plastics are the fastest growing segment of the watershed waste stream, creating serious and deadly impacts on marine creatures and food webs. The world ocean is increasingly becoming more of an artificial environment, more like a synthetic sea. Research over the past decade has provided a way to understand the increase in scientific terms. Scientific trawls in the remote Pacific in 1999 by the Algolita Marine Research Foundation revealed that drifting plastic outweighed available zooplankton or food by a factor of nearly 6 to 1, as demonstrated by this trawl sample. So that was a decade ago. Recent trawls by Algolita, as recently as 2008, recorded an average of about 46 pounds of plastic to one of zooplankton in the same region, known as the Northeast Pacific Gyre. This alarming increase is demonstrated by this sample choked with toxic plastic fragments. The plastic recovered in the 2008 sample has been reduced to severely degraded chips due to photo degradation and the loss of plasticizers. This makes plastic brittle, allowing it to break down over time by wave action. Plastics are known to sort pollutants up to 1,000,000 times their concentration in the surrounding waters, creating toxic drifters. Plastic debris at some point can be confused for food due to size, shape, and color. Since beach plastic in Hawaii are mostly blue, black, and white chips, researchers believe that much of the red and yellow degraded plastic has been confused for food and eaten by turtles, birds, and fish, thus contaminating food chain. As we look at the samples collected over time, the lack of warm colored chips is obvious. What we see are more white, blue, green, and black, severely oxidized fragments. Consuming toxic plastic is believed to create endocrine disruption that impacts gender, whereby males become more feminine and fail to produce sperm. Since more than half of plastic sinks, the seafloor becomes impacted as well. Mostly unseen, bottom debris can smother the seafloor habitats and restrict gas exchange from bottom to the water column. The problem is not restricted to post-consumer products and packaging. There are feedstock or pre-production polymers shaped like pearls. They escape factories and are carried by the watershed into rivers and eventually into the ocean. These tend to resemble eggs, complete with a yolk-like interior. Today, plastic dust is also employed in synthetic products. These dust particles also escape into the watershed and are so small that undersea creatures collect it as they move through the water column. The smaller the fragments, the fewer of them are found, indicating that filter feeders had collected them. Do zooplankton consume these tiny particles? Studies are needed to determine if synthetic dust is in fact consumed by zooplankton. If so, this polymer dust could severely impact the very foundation of the ocean's food web. Marine debris changes life in the world ocean. In Indonesia, carrier crabs have long used sea urchins for protection as they forage. Now, plastic cups have replaced sea urchins. Not to be outdone, it appears that sea urchins have also made the transition to plastic. humans need to consider controlling their waste stream. Booms and rivers can help sequester trash from escaping into the sea. And public works can remove the debris to landfills. In other countries, there are grassroots approaches to controlling marine debris. In Sulawesi, Indonesia, dive operators have a hotline where marine debris is reported and scooped up by a catamaran called the Matabele, which is equipped with a debris retrieval system. The plastic is removed and the natural debris returned to the sea. Concerned divers are also active in removing trash they encounter. Here we see the effects of plastic on coral reefs. Plastic can smother and kill coral. Plastic floating at or near the surface is part of a drifting ecosystem called a windrow. Here, you can make out concentrations of zooplankton, drifting jelly, and tinafores, all mixing with the marine debris and plastic chips. You can observe herring schools feeding and see how the drifting trash attracts all manner of foragers. These drift zones used to be natural, but over time have become increasingly infused with synthetics. Drifting containers like this oil can can transport marine creatures over a wide stretch of the ocean. Drifting sargassum is also home to juvenile filefish, attracting even more predators. Over the eons of millennia, foraging sea creatures have been using these windrows for nutrition. And now these debris zones contain toxic accumulations of plastic. Due to the long life of polymers in the marine environment, it is vital humans control their litter locally, nationally, and internationally.
Bibi, we have a question.
Yes.
You know, plastic. How does she feel about the technology coming out of Japan that turns plastic back into crude oil fuel for remediation?
I think it's wonderful, and I mean, I have a video on that. It's simply called Turning Plastic into Oil. If you want to look that up on Next World TV, I have a short video about that. The problem is it's very, very expensive right now, but If like anything else, I mean, if it could be mass produced and brought online, it is just a miracle to watch that. It makes, you know, you get goosebumps. You actually see him put garbage into one end and oil comes out.
Do you want to watch?
It's fascinating.
Do you want to put that up for people to watch?
Okay, I'm not really sure how long it is or. It's called Turning Plastic into Oil.
Turning Plastic into Oil. I'm just doing a search and showing people how to do this. There's nothing for that search yet, but we're hard at work filling the site. Well, let's go back and do another search. I don't see exactly where the search is here. About us site.
Let's see. I'll tell you where it is, or I'll if you look up reducing waste category, I'm sure that's a category that it would come up under.
I love the way that your site is arranged because you can get where you're going really easy.
Thank you. Yes.
Turning plastic into oil.
Do you see it there?
Yes, and I'm going to start it right now.
Okay, great.
And then we'll watch the ladies in the garden, which I love.
Great.
Well, I've lost my sound.
Now, this parts of this is in subtitles.
Okay, what? It's in subtitles?
Part of it, because he's speaking Japanese, it is produced in English, but the subtitles, maybe if you could read that or, you know, narrate for your audience who's not seeing it.
Okay, will do. Very nice, looks like flowering trees, maybe. As a child, I enjoyed playing in nature. I didn't care about the environment. But since I came here and had my own children, the places where I used to play as a child have disappeared. And I was trying to turn the sound down. From 2000, there was talk of global warming. Elsewhere in the world, there are few places to dispose of garbage. And the effects of trash can be very bad. And they are showing, it looks like a computer printout. Oh, we thought we could convert plastic back into oil, and you're seeing a scientist in a big machine pouring, looks like chopped up credit cards or plastic bits into the top end. So that's how he started. This is the oil conversion machine. Looks like a big trash can.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
And on the top, he's putting something that looks like a water spout on a sink. This is the plastic ingredients, and he's putting in their old sandwich containers, stuffing that down into what looks like a trash can. Styrofoam, pieces of packaging. And he says that he's going to turn all of this into oil. Now, I screwed down the top of the lid. For people who want to watch this, go to Next World TV. And then they're going to raise the temperature, melt the plastic. The liquid boils and gas passes through this tube he's looking at in some kind of collector. Says this is tap water in this collector, and the water cools the gas and turns the gas into oil. It looks like a very simple thing, except we're having trouble understanding it because everything coming up here is in Japanese. The oil is okay to burn as it is, just comes out, and then he says you can further process it into gasoline, diesel, or kerosene. Looks like a very, very simple process. If you separate the oil, then you can use it in the car, motorbike, generator, a boiler, stove. You can use it the same way as regular oil. Bibi, why don't people do this? It looks so easy.
Yes, I know. Those machines cost thousands and thousands of dollars. It's just not something a household can buy, but doesn't it look amazing? And wouldn't it be wonderful if there could be a mass marketing of this, production of it, if it could be brought?
Come together and put the price together. He's burning a dish of this oil. It's certainly giving off energy, reduces about 80% of the CO2 emissions. You know, and when we watch the ocean thing, I mean, tons and tons of trash that could be turned into usable oil. And even though the machine is very expensive, it looks easy. And once a community would buy the machine, maybe people could just go there and get their oil and get away from this gasoline that's almost $4 a gallon now.
Yes, and going up, I just heard.
Now, I'm going to get political here and tell you, I looked up some of these end-of-the-year reports, and these distillers, these gasoline folks, are making the highest profits ever. Now, why is the price going up? Okay, a note from BB. BB used the word expensive with regard to this technology of turning plastic back into oil. It will be far more expensive if we don't do this and start doing it immediately. Perhaps this would be a good for putting the cart before the horse.
Yes, exactly. I mean, just imagine if every building or house or community could have, imagine, even if there were just one in every town, you know, a massive headquarters where there, this machine is just pretty much, like you said, the size of a small garbage can, but they, there are big ones also that are meant for you know, massive scale. But they're prohibitively expensive. And no, I agree. This is what we should be investing in. And meanwhile, what we can do is absolutely not incur any more plastic use. I've become fanatical about reusing plastic bags. I rinse them out. You know, I rinse out the little ones, and I sometimes even rinse out garbage bags and reuse them. I just feel terrible about every piece of plastic that I have to throw away. And packaging, we have to demand less packaging in food and takeout food. I always try to say I don't need a bag, and I always try to bring my own container. Now, if we all did that, a lot less plastic would end up in the landfills while we're waiting for this technology.
Well, I think it's much more important to get rid of the plastic that we do have, even than getting this stuff turned back into oil. Getting rid of the plastic, to me, is much more important. Someone says the desk model is about $10,000, and another person says, it's my understanding that there's one of these machines operating in the Pittsburgh area. The costs are, Moon said in answer to the question, it says not calling one. Maybe he means not talking one. But chat to him. He seems to know something about it. Just in the participants in the chat room, go in and click on his name and chat with him about the cost of that. Maybe you can post some more information. One big plastic conversion unit at each major waste dump site would change the world. Yes, and BB's trying to get that out to everyone. BB, how do you feel about people taking the link to this and sending it out to all of their list of people? This is so incredibly important.
I would love that. I love nothing more. All the videos you're mentioning, I feel, are, you know, they're eye-opening, and we know plastic's a problem, but I believe these two videos that you've just highlighted, I mean, can do so much to really awaken this a new level of awareness about plastic, and there's plenty more on my site about how to reuse plastics and recycle. That people are building not just little sheds or decorative things, but they're building homes and churches and aqueducts and water tanks out of water bottles. So I don't want to change the subject or get ahead too much, but just to say that there's a lot of creativity in this world about how to reuse the plastic that's already here.
We have not played Oceans of Plastic yet, and I think that is a real opener. It's 8 minutes long, I think, so let's play a little bit of that so they can see how this is accumulating all over. And I think one of the things that's happening is this is not only about helping our environment, but it's also allowing us freedom. If 10 people would go together at $1,000 a piece and buy one of these machines, they can have free oil, kerosene, gasoline, $1,000, or 20 people at $500. Every community, I think once people see this one that's just coming up, that is a movement that we might want to start.
Absolutely. What a great idea. What a great idea for a community.
For centuries, the oceans have been used as a dumping ground for waste. Since the 1960s, post-consumer plastic products have become the most common and persistent pollutants in the world's oceans. Plastics are lightweight, durable, and cost-effective. Plastics can be fabricated into most anything. Lamentably, these same properties pose a serious long-term hazard to ecosystems. It has been said that plastics, like diamonds, are forever. Plastics are the fastest growing segment of the watershed waste stream, creating serious and deadly impacts on marine creatures and food webs. The world ocean is increasingly becoming more of an artificial environment, more like a synthetic sea.
For those of you just listening,
research over the past decade has provided a
this
way
is an
to
ocean
understand
of plastic
the new
they're showing.
In scientific terms. Scientific trawls in the remote Pacific in 1999 by the Agalita Marine Research Foundation revealed that plastic outweighed available zooplankton or food by a factor of nearly 6-1, as demonstrated by this trawl sample. That was a decade ago. Recent trawls by Agalita, as recently as 2008, recorded an average of about 46 pounds of plastic to one of zooplankton in the same region known as the Northeast Pacific Gyre. This alarming increase, as demonstrated by this sample choked with toxic plastic fragments.
Stevie, anytime you want to jump in here and talk about what this is, you are welcome to. This is about fish eating the plastic rather than them eating the food.
It's just staggering, isn't it, when you think of that. That means we are eating that, just like all the garbage that goes into factory farm animals. We are eating that. We become our ecosystem. It's part of us. It's inside us, all this toxicity.
It can be confused for food due to size, shape, and color. Since beach plastic in Hawaii are mostly blue, black, and white chips, researchers believe that much of the red and yellow degraded plastic has been confused for food and eaten by turtles, birds, and fish, thus contaminating the ocean's food chain. As we look at the samples collected over time, the lack of warm, colored chips is obvious. What we see are more white, blue, green, and black, severely oxidized fragments. Consuming toxic plastic is believed to create endocrine disruption that impacts gender, whereby males become more feminine and fail to produce sperm. Since more than half of plastic sinks, the seafloor becomes impacted as well. Mostly unseen, bottom debris can smother the seafloor habitats and restrict gas exchange to the water column. The problem is not restricted to post-consumer products or feedstock or pre-production polymers shaped like pearls. They escape factories and are carried by the watershed into rivers and eventually into the ocean. These tend to resemble eggs, complete with a yolk-like interior. Today, plastic dust is also employed in synthetic products. These dust particles also escape into the watershed and are so small that undersea creatures collect it as they move through the water. The smaller the fragments, the fewer of them are found, indicating that filter feeders had collected them. Do zooplankton contain tiny particles? Studies are needed to determine if synthetic dust is in fact consumed by zooplankton. If so, this polymer dust could severely impact the very foundation of the ocean's food web. Marine debris changes life in the world ocean. In Indonesia, carrier crabs have long used sea urchins for protection as they forage. Now, plastic cups have replaced sea urchins. Not to be outdone, peers at Sea Urchin have also made the transition.
Okay, I think we've made the point here, and it's beginning to repeat itself with the other video that we showed. The idea is, here are these seas of plastic, and you can't even see up through the top of the water. The camera's from underneath. And it is, Phoebe, how did this get in the ocean? Is somebody dumping this?
It's a lot of industrial waste finds its way there even more than consumer waste. And I don't really know about, I really don't know how it breaks down, what percentage is actually dumped and what part just ends up there. But because of winds and currents, a lot of it just ends up there. And you know, but really the issue is no matter where it goes, it doesn't biodegrade. Even if it's properly disposed of in a landfill, no matter what happens to plastic, it doesn't biodegrade. It doesn't make sense to produce anymore. We really need to stop producing it. And there are so many different ways to produce, for example, different kinds of packaging that does biodegrade. I'm just adamant that people start demanding this from suppliers, from stores. There are biodegradable egg cartons, food packaging. I have a video on my site about some people making a biodegradable packaging made from mushrooms, actually, that can replace styrofoam.
Well, we've got a lot of interest in this. Do you know the actual name of this machine or how we can get in touch with the manufacturer to purchase some of this?
I can find out before this broadcast is over.
Okay, and we will put that out to our people. Somebody wrote in that said, if it's $10,000, for 10 people, that'd be $1,000. We spend about $100 a week on gas. So that's $5,000. We're spending right there. But if a community goes there at 20 people, it would be $500 a piece, 40 people, $250, 80 people, $125. I don't know if one of these little machines could deal with 80 people. Probably depends on how much plastic trash you could find. But I would bet that people in your community, if you gave a trash can, put all your plastics in there. Let's see how much of this we can deal with. This is a great project, and we'll help you all we can. And one of the things, I think this little piece of the movie, some of it was redundant, but it's not just the oceans are polluted. It's the fish and the livestock in the oceans, if you want to call it livestock, are eating this and reducing their population, and the birds are eating the fish, and it's reducing the bird population, and it's affecting us all. This is not just let's clean up the oceans or let's get cheap fuel, although that's a great incentive. Wow, this is a wonderful project that we can take up. We probably have about 3,000 people in our group that we'll try to get this to, and they're from all over the world. And if you can't find the link, then send it to me and later, and I will post it all to the people who are on the show.
I can see that it's made by a company called Blest, BLEST, and the current tabletop model can convert 1 kilo of plastic into 1 liter of oil and sells for $9,500. Now, when I went to the BLEST website, it was in Japanese, but let's see.
Is it .com?
I just clicked over, so let me see. Blest machine, yeah, okay. BLEST.
BLEST oil conversion, we'd probably find it. Oh, here it is. Andrew's putting it up for us. Blest.com.jp. bless.com.
Okay.
.co, I'm sorry, blest.co.jp. And then for English, it's / S-E-I-H-I-N, S-E-I-H-I-N, - English.html.
And okay.
That you got that to us. Wow, this is exciting to be part of this.
Yes, it is. It is.
I think it would be incredible for the entire planet and lots of things up and down the line. But I want to get in more information, as exciting as that is. Okay, I was just turning off that last one. I want to share with them the women's garden.
Yes.
But what I really had up was the Common Sense Solutions starting at Woman Share. I wanted to wait till that one is last. So let's go look at the link. That was, do you remember the name of it? Two women who are doing the gardens.
Okay. Yes, I'll get the name of that. I believe it's Turning Backyards into Gardens. But let me see.
Turning Backyard. I had all of this up and then everything fell apart. Turning Backyards.
Turning Backyards into Gardens is the name of the video.
Okay. And every time I think I have this all set up, I can't spell yards. My computer drops and then everything gets weird. Next World TV, how long has that been going on?
I started it in January of last year, so 14 months.
What are some of the really popular categories that people could go in and search under?
Growing food is very popular. Reducing waste is popular. Plenty of videos are cross-categorized, like enlightened simplicity. Today I have a video up about some people in California, some surfers who have figured out how to turn styrofoam into surfboards. Permaculture is popular. I think growing food is very popular. The tiny house movement is popular. That's not a category, but that's under shelter. People love everything about these tiny houses. Living, you know, anything relating to downsizing is appealing.
Why do you think, I think this is wonderful. I get stuff from you almost every day, so this must be a full-time labor of love for you.
Yes, it is.
Well, how did we get into this shape that we polluted ourselves with plastic and we, you know, there's laws now against growing food in your yard. I mean, how did we get into such a stupid situation that we take care of ourselves?
Yeah, the lure of inexpensive, I mean, from industrialism on, we've been thinking technology can make life easier for us. So that, of course, after, you know, humanity has struggled to stay warm and make food, all these eons, and then all of a sudden there's industrialism, there's coal, there's oil. Oil changed everything. It changed agriculture. All of a sudden, the Green Revolution, there's more food than we know what to do with. There's plenty of food, but it's monocrops, and it's done with fertilizers, great inputs of fossil fuel energy to create all this food. And we have become used to a life where we're really not paying a lot for food, and compared to what it should cost if it were all pesticide-free, organic, and grown locally. We know that costs more, and I just want to tell everybody to please support that, because that is what we have to go back to. And this nutritionally deficient GMO-produced cheaper food is killing us and the planet. So my short answer, that's my long answer, Sherry, that we were seduced by an easier life, and we've had this great party. It's the era of cheap oil, and it's almost over. We have to go back to doing things in a sensible, sustainable way.
We have some very good comments from our audience, and they must be jumping on your site. Permaculture is a good section. Tiny houses, yay, says another person. Says, wonderful karma this would make for those who make this happen in their area. Moonstone says, you have to watch Chicken Tractor. It's an absolute hoot. Not says, follow the money. You know, one of my favorite ones is baking bread in the sun, and if we don't, if I don't hurry things up instead of just jawing here, we're not going to get to see that one. So this one is turning backyards into gardens, and this is the first one I ever saw, and it's what made me fall in love with Next World TV.
I just want to add, Sherry, yes, this is a great story about two women who... Oh, sorry, were you starting it?
Go ahead, I stopped it.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just want to say it's a great story about two women who decided to go into business developing people's backyards. So converting backyards into gardens, you know, to preparing the soil, creating the boxes, giving them a plan and figuring out the soil content, the sunshine, everything. So creating a backyard, turning it into a garden. But the larger issue here is one very important thing that we can all be doing is rethinking our front yards, our front lawns and back. In other words, thinking of the land around us, however little it is, a tiny little suburban lawn, you know, can be food producing. It doesn't have to be this manicured thing where we're using fossil fuel inputs again for, you know, creating water. It's basically a waste of water, and to fertilize a lawn just for the look of a lawn. Just picture a suburban lawn, you know, anywhere, Florida. Next World TV would like everyone to tear up their lawns front and back and grow food. That's my summary. And so these women have just made it easier for people to do that.
Yeah, they'll do it for you and give you part of the food. One of the things I love about it is when you watch this and you look at the soil they have created from this red, gooey, clay-looking stuff to this dark, rich, nutrient-rich foods that unless you go to the farmer's market, you're not going to see. Okay.
Right.
Bringing the people behind our food to life.
My name's Robin Streeter. I moved to Portland probably about 7-8 years ago and met Donna up at school. I graduated a term early, so I went to Idaho to visit my parents and to prune their fruit trees and, you know, basic manual labor you make your kids do. And Donna was still here.
All right. That's a done bed. We were going to actually do a regular traditional CSA, couldn't find land and couldn't find water rights. Something was always wrong. And
we actually had talked about, you know, maybe it's not going to happen right now. Maybe we should just go get jobs somewhere when we're done with school. It was very frustrating. She was driving around, started seeing these people's yards everywhere and got this fabulous idea. Donna realized that people have lawns, they have backyards that aren't being used for anything and they want the food. And if we do it in their space, they get to see what's happening. They get to know who the farmer is. They get to walk outside.
Bebe, explain this CSA.
Okay, a CSA is Community Supported Agriculture. It's a system where a local farm can basically sell you a subscription. So you pay up front at the beginning of the season, and every week you pick up a box of produce. Sometimes in cities it works this way that a farm delivers to a health food store or something, so you're not really going by a farm to pick up your produce. In fact, CSAs are very popular in cities because of that reason. So it's a way to directly support a local farm and get whatever's coming up you don't choose. You just take a box every week for a prepaid sum.
Okay.
So a CSA, that's what that is.
And eat. That day, it was just like this hit that you get, that it's like that one of those aha moments that you go, of course, why aren't we doing it that way? I made flyers and went to every community board in town, left at like 7 in the morning and came home at noon, and there were 2 phone calls. And it was like, oh, I think we're onto something here. So she called me up in Idaho and said, you better get back here. If you're in on this, you got to get back here.
It's real sandy at the top here.
It immediately went from there, and it never stopped.
Super carrot.
In fact, we sold out our first year. We sold out our second year.
They're digging up someone's backyard. That's what the extra talking is about, sandy soil.
We get to see so many different environments every day. It's never boring. They're all a challenge because each one is different. Each one's soil is different. It's just cool to do it this way.
We have, 7 to 8 farms that we get a day. So you move through them. You have to. And to keep it carbon footprint friendly and sustainable, basically, all of our farms anyway are all done demographically. Every one of them.
I think people are more aware of where they're food is coming from and what they actually want to feed their family. It's a movement, definitely. I think in some ways it's become almost a status quo type thing. I think that some of the people that could benefit the most from it aren't able to do that because the price of land is so expensive. But you can barely afford to buy a house, let alone a house with some area to grow anything on. So what do you think is the status quo? It's very popular now to be organic and green. I think this is a passing trend. I don't think it's a passing trend. I think that I do believe that people jumped on the bandwagon because it is something to be proud of. And hopefully they're going to stick with it because they realize that it benefits them too.
It's not just a landscape any longer. It's an actual place that you can feed your family off of. So in the future, it might raise the value of their property or their house. It's going to encourage them to maybe spend some more time with whoever they're living with. Maybe a little bit more time spent eating together and talking and outside together, looking at things.
It's incredibly beautiful as the season goes on.
It really doesn't matter who they are or what they, what age they are, it's about bringing that food home and bringing each other together. Local food is right now where everybody really needs to be at, especially as related to transportation and everything else is going. The more you bring your food home and the availability of it, you're getting good food, where it's coming from. Just in Portland alone, even with the traditional CSAs and what we're doing, and there's a couple other people out there doing other things that are all about urban farming, I think that we don't have enough shares, enough people growing food locally here to support the community itself. I think there was like 2,500 shares or something like that available. That means that only 2,500 people have access to food through our urban farms.
But
there's room for a lot more farmers. Definitely.
I think this is absolutely incredible. I was looking at some of the choices under food choices because I was trying to find the one about the lady and baking bread in the sun, and I'm looking down through this list. 45,000 reasons to swap to fair trade chocolate. Are you making Americans fat? Cereal crimes, commercial kitchen composting. That is a great one. I've watched that one. Compassion in world farming. Easy to make cheese. Farmageddon. Food justice. Food not lawns. Food sovereignty. Goat share crackdown. Home canning introduction. How to make homemade sauerkraut. I remember my grandma doing that. How to shop at a farmer's market. The U.S. forcing GMO foods on Europe. They're cracking down and not allowing those in. Local food trucks, raw milk. Boy, that's been a hot topic. Martha Stewart speaks out about cruelty to farm. Eat local. Eat from the soil. Millions against Monsanto. And Ron Paul on health freedom. I thought you weren't political.
I'm not. I just wanted to promote the fact that he is the only candidate who cares about things like raw milk, just because I feel that that is important to the discussion of self-sufficiency. And it, you know, there are, that's why I wanted to promote that.
School lunch programs. Have you seen in the news about they took away this turkey and cheese sandwich of banana and potato chips and some like a pizza?
Yes.
You gave her chicken nuggets?
How insane.
Yes. And they really think they have a right to do it. They really did that. $200 hamburger. That should be interesting. The world according to Monsanto. Truth behind cage-free farming. But I couldn't find the great stuff here. Your coffee has new powers. I couldn't find the lady baking bread. Is it not under food?
Okay. What was it? Cooking with Sunshine, I believe, is the one you're referring to. And it's probably more under like energy or innovations, which are some other categories. But the title is Cooking with Sunshine.
Okay. I'm trying to find it here. There it is. Cooking. Oh. Energy, it's under energy, it's under innovations, and it's under low impact. So this was amazing to me that you could cook bread outside in the sun with such incredible common things.
Yes.
No. I can't remember what else. You know, it's running me around in circles here, and this is my fault. It's not Bibi's fault at all. She's very well organized. It's my computer just giving me fits and popping stuff up all over. But it just never dawned on me that you could cook bread in an oven from the sun, because it's supposed to be, now see, it won't even let me in here to this. It won't let me into any of them. This is making me, I'll go another way. Cooking with Sunshine. While we're looking this up, Bibi, do you do this all on your own, or do you accept donations, or how can we help you?
Thank you. That's so generous of you to ask that. I make money on the ads, and they are often in conflict with the content, because ads are generated by keywords. So I'm not selling, you know, blah, I'm not selling the space to advertisers that I negotiate with directly. It's a program called Google AdSense, and it is indeed maddening when sometimes, for example, plastic bags. I may have a post about not using plastic bags, and what comes up? Ads for Hefty. Things like. So it's maddening, but that is how I'm able to do this without charging a subscription fee, and that is how I can do it. Unfortunately, there's not an AdSense option where I'm able to view it. And even if I could view what comes up on my screen, different advertisers come up on different people's screens. So you and I aren't even seeing the same ads on the same page.
I would like to know more about that because I want to put up ads about our free classes. We just finished a series of classes on giving away software for nutrition evaluation, Parkinson's, radiation, the flu season, so that people can monitor themselves. And we are going to restart that in March and do it again. It was so well received. And we're trying to address the answers in health, like the GMO foods causing such a plethora of Parkinson's and MS and Lou Gehrig's, and then the other one was PTSD, the returning soldiers, and trying to help them. We're going to run out of time during this session. I hope they allow us to stay on. But if they want to get in touch with you, do they just go to nextworldtv.com and up the top where it says contact?
Yes, that's right. That's
so if they have ideas or they just want to tell you how much they love you?
Yes, exactly. And more importantly, tell your friends. It's free to subscribe. It's very easy to unsubscribe. You don't have to fill anything out. I just need your email address, and you'll be notified every day, or every day there is a new video. There's no fee. There's nothing, you know, this list will never be sold to anybody. And it's just one click if you want to unsubscribe. So like I said, spread the word around, share it with your friends on Facebook, and I'm really enjoying providing this service, and I'm learning so much and changing the way I live and go through life as a Westerner here. I have really enjoyed delving into this information and promoting it. Like I said, I'm like a DJ here. I'm just spinning certain things more than others.
Jean says to us in the chat, Ed Begley Jr. did the outdoor oven on his show Living with Ed a while back. Well, if you, almost every category, there are hundreds of videos here, and we certainly appreciate you doing this, and thank you for being on the show. If they cut us off before we get finished here.
Okay.
Have you back anytime you want to be with us.
Thank you, Sherry, and thank you for the work you're doing in healing and in promoting all good things.
Go Springs, California, but Eleanor Schimmel is cooking al fresco. She's using no electricity, no gas, no charcoal or wood.
I'm going to check on this chicken and rice and see how it's cooking.
It looks like a little window box with foil to reflect the light and a glass. And she's got the stuff done in this box. She's cooking a whole meal.
It can be used to cook meat and fish to grains and greens. While solar stoves can be a great energy saver, in the developing world, they can be a genuine lifesaver.
So the sunshine, you have an alternative to fire. And that's important for 2.5 billion people to learn about because they're running out of traditional fuels.
Bob Metcalf is a microbiologist, and along with the ship, a founding member of Solar Cookers International, a small Sacramento nonprofit. Their goal is to help stop the devastating deforestation and ease the burden of women.
They have to walk about 2 to 3 miles or so to collect wood. And then they have to tend the fire. It burns their eyes and chokes their lungs.
According to the World Health Organization, this indoor pollution has been linked to the deaths of almost 2 million women and children each year. With help from other aid groups, SCI has already trained more than 30,000 families to cook their traditional food to the sun.
This is good. It's very good. Consistency is good. The texture is fine. No problem.
The Solar Cook-In is a simple stove that only costs about $5, but will last almost 2 years.
Shiny things direct the sunshine onto a dark pot that then absorbs the sunshine and changes that light energy into heat energy. And heat energy doesn't get out of the clear plastic bag. It doesn't get out of the window.
Solar Cook-In is also being touted as a sustainable way to purify water.
6,000 people a day are going to die of waterborne diseases in developing countries. If you heat water, to 65 degrees Celsius, 149 Fahrenheit, you can pasteurize water and make it safe to drink.
To determine when this level has been reached, SCI developed a handy wax-based gauge called a WAPI.
If the water gets hot enough to melt this wax, the water has reached pasteurization temperatures.
From Nepal to Nicaragua, there are similar solar projects underway in nearly every country worldwide. And SCI is striving to get solar stoves into much wider use.
SCI, Solar Cooking International.
Isn't that wonderful? That's being promoted all over the third world. That's an example of a common sense innovation that can be produced for $5 each.
It's just, for those of you that aren't watching us, it's a box, looks like it's about 2 by maybe 2.5, maybe 10 to 12 inches deep. They've lined it with some kind of foil, like aluminum foil almost, and the pot's in this box. It's a dark, looks like a ceramic or iron pot, and they're just directing the sunshine into this box. I think it would take a little bit to get used to it, but I think it's an incredible idea. What if we don't have any electricity for a while?
This exactly.
Hold on a second. That's terrible to say on the radio, but I have to sneeze. So we succeeded in running a little long. Vivi, I think you are a godsend to the world for self-sufficiency as we go on with this. I just want to say thank you again.
Thank you so much, Sherry. A pleasure to be on with you and your audience. Thank you very much.
No gas, no charcoal or wood.
I'm going to check on this chicken and rice and see how it's cooking. Ah, it's doing a good job.
Instead, Eleanor is harnessing the sun to make her meals, as she's done almost daily since the early 80s. As long as there's sunshine, regardless of air temperature, solar stoves can be used to cook everything from meat and fish to grains and greens. While solar stoves can be a great energy saver, in the developing world, they can be a genuine lifesaver.
So with sunshine, you have an alternative to fire. And that's important for 2.5 billion people to learn about.